WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. That's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth,
very
Charlie
good.
Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us, sir. How are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome and good evening. You are tuned in to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9. WATD coming to you from Broadcast House, and I say this every week. I don't know why I say it, because every show, at least I think so, Jared would probably say the same thing for his own particular program.
Sure.
I think every show is a great show and unique unto itself. Of course,
Jared. I agree. I'm sorry.
And
I'm,
of course, yeah, I was waiting for you to go. Come on.
I'm not used to being in this seat, Kevin. I'm used to being in yours.
Well, you're not sitting on your side while I'm here.
Never.
No, I'm kidding. Jared, of course, Jared Valenzuela, as you know, from the JV team, Wednesday nights from 6:15 to 7. He is here, and he's part of a...
Star-studded panel.
Star-studded panel. That actually, we had to do some last-minute shuffling. And
I think we may have upgraded.
Oh, I'll take that as the upgrade, Jared.
We have certainly upgraded
Thank
with
you.
Replinatra and...
First of all, I don't have my own show.
Kevin,
am I the only one that doesn't have their own show here?
I don't have a show.
Oh, okay. All right.
Repticos pays for my show, but sponsors.
We're about 70% in general,
yeah.
You know.
So
70% attendance.
I will identify all the voices. So, yes, you are State Rep. Kathy Lenatra, representing all the fine folks in the 12th Plymouth District.
Correct.
We also have State Rep Dave DeCoste.
Right, representing Hanover, Norwell, and Rockland.
And Hanson.
Well, not yet. Hanson will be next year, but we have definitely made forays down there, and they're wonderful people.
Okay,
God bless them.
Hey, he had a good amendment, and he's absolutely correct. And then,
right, yeah.
Not last or least, but I think he's been on this program before. We have Justin Evans. He is a Whitman selectman, member of the select board in Whitman, and also. Aren't you part of the Democrats or Young Democrats or Whitman Democrats?
I'm a member of most of those groups, the South Shore Young Democrats, the Young Democrats in Massachusetts, the Whitman Democratic Town Committee. I was a delegate to the Democratic National Convention in Milwaukee virtually last
Great.
Year, too.
Hey, I do all that on the Republican side, so there you go. An even better balance.
Yeah. So, of course, Jared, and I you know, teased him as a show host, but he also is a Plymouth County Commissioner. Thank representing 120 and 26
Six
communities, 27 communities.
And if you're looking to fill time, I can name them all.
it's all, we're all set with that. But the idea, at least the first hour, is to chat. Now, I know that Jared had a chance to kind of break this down on his show last week. I kind of thought of having it where it was a little bit more of a round table, a discussion. Knowing that here on the South Shore, I feel like a lot of the folks who are elected, whether it's on the county level, on the state level, on the municipal level, yeah, okay, you might joust a little bit with one another about whether, you know, you're a Republican mm-hmm. or a Democrat, but all in all, the group likes to work together. You want to get things done,
yep.
You do your
Correct.
Best to work, and
Correct.
you put aside, you know, the D, the R, or the mm-hmm. unenrolled, or independent, or whatever party has been newly created that you're a part of, and then it's, you know, you do things to work together. But big announcement last week.
Pretty big.
Governor Charlie Baker decides not to seek a third term. Also, Lieutenant Governor Karen Polito decides that she will not seek a nomination to be the Commonwealth's next governor. Folks scratching their head. What could it be? So the idea of our conversation here today is to pontificate as to why. What led to Charlie going? Because let's not forget, prior to the pandemic, Charlie was hands down one of the most favorite. He had his popularity was through the roof.
Still is in most polls.
It is.
I would say, I don't think it was a surprise that Charlie was not going to run again, but I will say I was surprised that Karen Pulido was not going to run.
Okay. So what we're going to do is we're going to put a pin in this conversation right now, and we are going to find out what's happening out on the roadways. Of course, it's being brought to you on this end by Brennan's Smoke Shop, with locations in Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, New Bedford, Weymouth, and drumroll please, Hudson, New Hampshire.
People used to say Brennan's Smoke Shop was Plymouth Center's best kept secret. Why anyone would want to keep us a secret, I have no idea. Maybe it's because we've been selling pipes and bongs for 30 years. Wow, things have changed quite a bit. I like to think, however, how things have stayed the same. Brennan's Smoke Shop, for instance, still selling pipes and bongs, tobacco and tobacco accessories. The only thing that has changed over here are the people. So many people over the years that have made our small business what it is today. This happy holiday is for you and all the people that work in small business across the country. Thank you for making the holidays great. Without you, this time of year would be nothing but a cardboard box. Happy holidays to all the people that make the holidays smashing. Brennan's Smoke Shop, the best smoke shop in Massachusetts and now New Hampshire. Brennan's Smoke Shop, Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, New Bedford, Weymouth, and now in Hudson, New Hampshire. Customers must be 21 years of age or older, and proper ID is required.
Follow Monday Night Talk on Twitter. Start at 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. And don't forget to add hashtag Monday Night Talk to your tweets. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
And we actually kind of got into conversation without me finish teasing the rest of the radio program. Coming up at 7 o'clock, hour number 2, we will have Paula Fleming. She is a chief spokesperson for the local Better Business Bureau. And the conversations about online scams, especially when it comes to social media and when you go to order something and maybe you don't get it for a while. Mm-hmm. When you get it, it's not the original. It's a facsimile of exactly what you wanted.
Right.
We're going to talk with... of that.
Yeah. So the Better Business Bureau actually did a study on this, and we're going to find out the details of the study and what you can do to better protect yourself this holiday season, because each one of us has a little bit of a bullseye on us when it comes to our loot and how they can be able to get it away from us. And then we are going to speak with Michelle LaRue. She is a spokesperson for Curaleaf's iCannabis campaign. This was actually a segment that we did a month ago, and I had a lot of folks who really liked this segment and asked if we would re-air it again, as Michelle was a victim, a part of the bombing, the marathon bombing, where she was severely injured. And not only was she injured physically, but a lot of this has taken a lot of mental toll on her, as to finding ways for pain through without taking opioids and suffering from, when you take certain medications, sometimes it's a test. It's trial and error.
Absolutely.
To be able to see if you're not going to be too groggy. Am I going to be able to function, or am I just going to be a slug? And so we will talk with her about how she was able to find a way to be not only pain-free, but also be able to find clarity when it comes to cannabis and being able to live her life using it.
That'll be a great segment.
Yeah. So, we actually started it just before traffic. We could pick right up where we left off. So, here's the rules. There are ground rules for this. Remember, first off, we are all friends here.
Of course.
Yep.
Regardless of what you are. But also, we're here to kind of discuss, because all of us, I think we have a vested interest in what ends up happening next year when the big vote, the general election vote comes down. in 2022, whether it's for state rep, state senate, one of the constitutional offices, or of course for governor.
Right.
And so the first segment, I think we'll all have to take a chance. We'll take our turns at talking about what we think led to the governor making his decision, why Karen might have made her decision. Again, as I said earlier, we all probably have our own sources and things that we've heard. So the idea is just to kind of put it together. The second segment that we do, we'll discuss who we think might be some of the top candidates, whether there are any candidates who have already entered the race. Mm-hmm. We know that there are three Democrats that are in the race. There's one Republican. How much of will that field fill out in the next couple of weeks, right, next couple of months? So we'll start off with what we think was some of the reasons, what went into the mix for Charlie to actually say, yeah, I'm all set.
Yeah, I mean, I'll jump in, Kevin. I think there were a couple of factors, I think. You know, for one, it was a decision he didn't arrive at lightly. A lot of the folks that I've spoken to and I know that are extremely close to the governor and lieutenant governor were actually pretty convinced that he was going for it. I think at some point early last week, there was a major break and change. I think the biggest thing, and it can't be understated, is, of course, I think it's been no secret that Chairman Jim Lyons and the hard right, not even hard right faction of the party, but the Trump faction of the Mass GOP has been in open warfare with Governor Baker for 4 years, for the entirety of President Trump's presidency. So when you factor that in, and you factor in that they believe in their mind that there is no difference between Charlie Baker and, say, a Governor Mara Healey or a governor whomever that the Democrats might nominate and win, I like to remind them now that they will see that difference and they'll feel that difference in a couple of years should a Republican not prevail. But I think the biggest thing, and I just sort of foreshadowed it, was the lack of control of the Mass Republican Party. You have a chair that was actively working with the governor's announced primary opponent, and Charlie relied very heavily, and Rep. DeCoste knows this as well, because when we were managing his campaigns, we worked very closely with the Baker-led Mass GOP on coordinated campaign efforts, fundraising, mailers, data, phone banking. I mean, just soup to nuts services that the party provided that the governor benefited from as well is now gone. And to fill some of that void, he formed the mass majority independent expenditure PAC that supported a lot of Republicans and some Democrats over the last year. But candidates cannot in any way, shape, manner, or form work with PACs. So I think...
I'm glad you pointed that out, because that was the one PAC we did not do any coordinating at all.
No, it's not allowed.
What Jared's talking about is, the governor provided us phone banks, everything from the
regional offices.
Regional offices.
45 at one point.
Thing, yeah. And also the fact that he could be counted on to do things like robocalls, right, and that type of thing. And although we couldn't coordinate with them, they knew pretty much where they had to send their mailers out to give us a hand. And that helps. And that helps a great deal. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, that's fine.
I wanted to be clear about that.
So when Mass GOP, when Kirsten Hughes was chair and working closely with the administration, well, not the administration, but the Baker-Polito campaign, that was a significant loss. And I think, and this is purely speculative on my part, I think Charlie and Karen absolutely calculated that they didn't think they would be able to probably, again, speculating, run the type of campaign that they've been able to run in the past with the robust support of the state party. And then I'll, real quick, with Lieutenant Governor Polito, I had known all along, at least some of the sources, that she was absolutely not going to run. Why that is only speculative. One speculation is perhaps she didn't think she could beat Attorney General Healey, which I wasn't totally convinced of. We don't have a history of electing attorney generals to governor or senator when they try to make that leap. But I think the other side of it is she's been doing this for 8 years. As she said in her press conference, her kids were in elementary school when they started as governor, lieutenant governor. They're entering high school. And I think she also calculated, does she really want to miss that time with her children? Mm. And, you know, in 48 years, she has $2.5 million in the bank. That's not going to go anywhere.
Right.
I think she can calculate that she can seed it off for 4 to 8 years. she's certainly young enough to make a comeback, certainly energetic enough to make a comeback. And I think that was a calculus for the lieutenant governor not making the run.
Well, she's proven that she can win office, being Absolutely. A state representative, yep. to being lieutenant Correct. Governor.
Got the most votes running for treasurer in 2010, so she's mm-hmm. a formidable
yeah,
candidate.
Yeah, there's a heck of a battle between her and Steve Grossman.
Yeah.
It was. So, you know, I want to step back a little bit. A campaign does a lot on a family. And as the governor had said, he had not seen his father during that whole pandemic, and his father's getting older. And I do think that his family and her family played a huge role in this. And mine's on a small scale, just running for a state rep, knowing what that does to my family. So on a larger scale, you know, when they started, we had that storm in 2015 where we're all without a power.
Yeah, right, that's right.
Right. We had the gas explosions in Andover. Yeah. We had the Marathon bombing. And now we had a pandemic. No one has lived through that or has served through that ever in my recollection, right? So that, I think that really made an impact, just mm-hmm. my personal opinion. Made an impact when you have a family, what that does on your family, not only yourself, but when you have people picketing in front of your house.
Right.
You know, there's many things that I think led to this decision, and I think family is one of them.
And I do think it's worth stating that, reminding everyone that the governor's stated reason for not running is that we're not out of the pandemic yet, and there's still a lot of work to do, and you know, running for office would distract from that. I mean, everyone around this table has been serving in office mm-hmm. through COVID-19, and it really wears you down after a period of time.
But you also look at the high level that the governor had to do it, you know, calling on a state of emergency in March of 2020.
Right.
You're basically telling people that you have to stay home, and then you're also telling businesses, certain businesses, mm-hmm. that they have to, they have to close down. They can only do certain types of business, you know, whether it's takeout. Mm-hmm. And then when we start seeing things come back to opening up and returning life as it was prior to the pandemic, you know, limiting businesses to, you know, only so much, you know, percentage of what they would normally do. And I remember seeing one sign in Halifax. It might have been your district or part of your old district, where it says that, you know, it said told the governor to take only 25% of his pay
mm-hmm.
because they were suffering the consequences of what he was trying to do as they were slowly trying to open things up in phases at that particular time. So, you know, part of me wonders if the pandemic took a toll on him.
It did, and significantly so. But it's interesting because I had always been of the opinion that, in a way, it almost would have led him to seek the third term, because I know there's a lot of policy and a lot of things that he wanted to get done that he couldn't. It was interrupted by the pandemic and full focus on the pandemic. But to that end, and Rep. LaNaccia hit on it perfectly as well, family getting worn down. And, you know, I can't imagine being the governor of Massachusetts, trying to do the best job you can, and just coming home every night and seeing, and I know some of the characters that are in front of his house, and mostly they're folks on the hard right, but remember the day that some environmental activists dropped like a pink boat or something off? It might be an interesting segue into exploring some semblance of a possibility of a governor's residence. We're one of the only states in the country that doesn't have that, and of course, you know, most folks remember Acting Governor Swift getting in trouble because she lived in North Adams, and that's not a commute, and that was prohibitive for someone like her. Right. Mm-hmm. So it might be an impetus, because I think that took its toll. And Rep. LaNaccia hit all the points I agree with his family and the lieutenant governors.
Anything else, Justin?
I was actually, unlike Jared, I was caught off guard when the lieutenant governor said she wasn't going to run. That I had really expected, if Charlie Baker did not choose to seek mm-hmm. the third term, she was just going to step up and run as his successor. Yeah. So this really... I think that was the biggest surprise last week.
And knowing that the two of them have probably built a war chest, and fundraising would not be that. I mean, they're the recognizable faces.
I think he pulled in $800,000 last month. So
mm-hmm. yeah.
And the other thing is, and we were saying off air, I mean, you know, I walked in the building and talked with Jared, and one of the things that we recognize, I think we all recognize, is that this administration and this lieutenant governor has been the steward of community compacts, mm-hmm. community PACs, to help communities and have that direct line to the administration if there are certain needs, certain programs that can be used to help that community.
Right.
And Jared and I were at a press conference mm-hmm. In Rockland for a grant monies that were provided for a water treatment plant. And Karen was there to kind of talk about it and also dole out information for other communities because they're not just going there for that one. If it's a presser, they're laying it out they're going to be representatives from other communities across the Commonwealth who are going to be there as part of this celebration event.
Yeah, no, I mean, she was. I mean, I think we were talking, and this is no exaggeration, I'm pretty certain Lieutenant Governor Polito visited every single community in Massachusetts, all 351, and that can't be understated. I mean, there's so many communities in central and western Mass that previously before never had any contact really with their state government outside of their representative or their senator. And I think there was a remarkable amount of appreciation when they first started. And I was working for former Senator Hedlund when Charlie and Karen were sworn in. There was a lot of appreciation for that connection that so many communities felt to the governor's office that I think previously hadn't been felt in the last several administrations. And to that end, I think that's what made the lieutenant governor's decision a little more interesting. You know, like I said, I had known that she wasn't going to if Charlie didn't, but it was still one of those that you still generally question why. And I think, again, the same problem would have existed for Karen as it does Charlie and Karen, which is there's no way they can do a coordinated campaign with the state party. They would have really been on their own, and I don't think they would have been able to have run the type of race necessary to win. I really do believe that Lieutenant Governor Polito against Attorney General Healey would be a toss-up for a multitude of reasons, but not in the present state of the Mass Republican Party, and I can't understate that enough. And I think Republicans in this state are also going to realize what it's like to not have that access anymore. You know, Rep. DeCoste can speak more to it, but the monthly caucus with the governor, that when a Democrat takes over, the Republican caucus will not be having those sit-downs with the governor and lieutenant governor monthly. And that's the type of access that I think is not appreciated enough by a lot of Republican activists in the state.
I think it was interesting to see over the last couple of weeks, there was a number of polls. I don't think any of them came from the Baker campaign or Baker office, but a theoretical matchup of Maura Healey as the Democratic nominee, Jeff Deal as the Republican nominee, and Charlie Baker as an independent. And it looked like Charlie Baker could have prevailed in that three-way race. Which makes this all more interesting that he chose not to.
How I will ask you this, Justin, and you, Rep. Lenatra. Mm-hmm. How do you feel that Charlie Baker was viewed either early on or even to date within the Democratic Party? Because he seemed, I think, a lot within his own party seemed to think that he was more leaning towards the Democrats and catering more towards the Democrats than he was towards Republican causes.
You know, so if you think of a moderate Democrat, yes. If you think of the progressive Democrats, no. You know, how do you feel?
I think that's the right way to put it. There were a lot of contentious Democratic State Committee meetings over the last few years where some people, you know, would stand up for Charlie Baker and immediately be shouted down from more progressive members of the same committee.
It's kind of funny when you're in the moderate part, you get beat up. I've said this to you many times. Mm. When you're a moderate, you get beat up by both sides, right? And I think that's what Governor Baker was feeling.
Right.
You know, but who has ever lived through a pandemic? You weren't going to win no matter what, you know, no matter what your decision was during this pandemic and what you decided, you weren't going to win.
Right.
But I mean, the reasoning that was given during the press conference was that he wanted to focus. I mean, their statement was noble, very noble, that they didn't want what they are trying to do or accomplish throughout the end of the term to be something that was politicized.
That's very good wording, yes.
Would you say that's accurate, Rep. DeCoste?
Yes and no. I think the bottom line is that the governor, I think 4 weeks ago, would have made the opposite decision. I was in a room with him in a fundraiser, and he indicated that he was going to be out in the campaign trail with us, supporting us, raising money and raising. And he might still do that. But the implication was that that he would be campaigning. And I just think simply that, you know, I think there are dynamics going on in the family, both Lieutenant Governor and the Governor, that are driving this decision largely. And keep in mind, the Governor, whenever I've heard him talk within those caucuses, within Republican, you know, meetings where he's at, he almost never fails to talk about his family, his late mother, his dad growing up, the fact that he's over. And, you know, his dad has had some medical issues going forward. His mother's gone. And I think what might be in his mind is that how many you know, more years does he have? And is it really worth going through what's going to be a very ugly election in 2022, both within the Republican Party and against the you know, potential Democrat and who knows, maybe independent candidate. You know, is it really worth it? So yes, that's, I mean, and it is true that if he's not campaigning, he can focus more on you know, some key issues that he wants to resolve before he leaves Beacon Hill.
I'm going to ask this to everybody in this room, because I have a mere speculation. Mm-hmm. Is it a far-gone conclusion that Charlie might be considered, knowing his popularity, knowing that the good things that he had done or accomplished within working with the Democrats and the Republicans, that he's looking at higher office?
No.
You don't think so?
Emphatically, no.
No?
Yeah.
Rep. Lenastra?
I'm surprised you said that, Jared. I'm not really sure. Not really sure, but
so you don't see a bid for 2024, 2028?
He did say he was asked directly about running for president, and he emphatically said no.
Yeah. Okay. Rep. DeCoats.
Well, he could be president. I think he'd be president of Harvard. I think he'd be president.
There you go. Yeah.
I do know this. You
know,
going back.
So you're saying he's going the Fred Clark, the Vinnie DiMasino route,
or the President Eisenhower route, who went to, you know, president of Columbia. But I can tell you that every time he talked about Washington, D.C., it was pretty clear he despised it.
Yeah.
So I don't think he's looking for any job that's going to put him into D.C.
I just figured maybe if he recharged the batteries for a couple of years and gain a little bit more, do some groundwork, gain some perspective, that maybe he might go,
Well, it's an interesting perspective. Maybe not president. I don't ever see him running for president, but...
Senator?
Well, there you go. And, I mean, Senator Markey is older. Senator Warren is older. That seat opens up. He's
going
to be... Where's
Swampscott, though? Where's that following the Senate lines? Is that more...
Well, statewide, it would be the same thing.
Okay.
But, I mean that wouldn't surprise me. I don't think so, because to Reptico's point, in all the years... I mean, I first met Charlie in 2009 when he ran for governor for the first time. And I honestly think if he wanted anything to do with D.C., he probably could have had... To your point about working well with Democrats, he probably could have had a cabinet-level position under the Biden administration, and he would have been a safe choice for a Democrat president to make. And I wouldn't have been surprised if those conversations were had, but I don't think he has any desire to be in Washington, D.C. And don't forget, his dad worked down there, too. So, you know, he had that experience, and I think he likes to get things done. And you point out how the four of us are all different, but yet we get along. We work extremely well together. Mm-hmm. It is by far and away the complete opposite in Washington, D.C., and I don't think Governor Baker has that type of... Look at Governor Sununu in New Hampshire took a pass on what likely would be a pretty easy U.S. Senate victory for him, and he said they expect me to wait around 2 or 4 years to start getting stuff done. I'm all set.
Mm. And I think I was thinking congressional seats. And
oh, congressional, yes.
So, so that's that on me, but I was going to throw that out there as well, so I kind of got those... Justin, your thoughts?
I was just going to say that the same thing that Jared hit on, that, you know, two of our moderate Republican governors to the north took a look at D.C. and said, no thanks, I'm staying where I am. Yep. So I think it's the same calculus for Charlie Baker, that things are better here than they are in D.C.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's for sure.
So here's the fun that we'll get to have in just a couple of moments, and that is, who do we see as possible clear choices that could enter this race or might choose not to? So we're going to step aside. You are indeed tuned in to Monday Night Talk right here on 95.9 WATD. More in just a few moments.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Each year, about 1 out of 2 men and 1 out of 3 women will develop cancer. But there's good news. Today's cancer survival odds are much better than 2 or even 3 years ago. Things move that fast. So if you're diagnosed, be sure to have someone in your corner who is on top of all the latest cancer treatments and techniques, the latest research, the newest equipment, all the newest medicines available through clinical trials. And speaking of corners, here's more good news. Advanced Cancer Care is now just around the corner. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare treats patients locally, with all oncology services and specialties conveniently housed under one roof. The center is affiliated with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, so you'll be seen by Harvard Medical faculty physicians and oncologists. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare, in affiliation with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. Cancer has just met its match. Find out why at mysignaturecare.org/cancercare.
Hey, it's John Shea here from Almost Famous Radio, introducing you to independent bands and musicians from across New England. Every Tuesday night, 8 till 10, brought to you by Tiny and Sons Glass. Tomorrow night, another full show for you, tons of new music and upcoming events to let you know about, and we'll be joined on the Tiny stage by singer-songwriter Kaylee Fetterman. That's tomorrow, 8 till 10, right here on 95.9 WATD and always streaming at 95.9WATD.com.
Be a part of the show. Call in and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
All right. We are back for the second part of this conversation. We hope that you are enjoying it as we have from my left. Well, actually, technically, my right. Jared Valenzuela.
That's ironic.
Jared Valenzuela, not only host of the JV team, heard every Wednesday night, but also Plymouth County Commissioner. We have State Representative Kathy Lenatra. We have Representative Dave DeCoste, who's studying a cup. And we have Justin Evans, who is a Whitman selectman. So, the next fun exercise that we can have here, and that is who are at this? We know that there are already four people who have already entered. Probably know there are others who are filing, but there have been names that have been thrown out, whether it's in the local scribes, whether it's on radio shows, whether it's on the on local Boston TV. We'll start with you, Justin. Thoughts as to who you'd like to see as a possible candidate, but who you think might be a candidate in the near future.
So I would really like to see Attorney General Maura Healey run. She's done it statewide. She's the big name that's been rumored for months now. Yep. And I think was probably part of Charlie Baker's calculus for not running again.
Really?
I think so. Some of the early polling, she would at least have made it competitive, and he hadn't had a big name challenger, I think, since he ran against DeWalt Patrick. Well, Coakley, I guess, would be the last big.
It was like, wasn't it like a 44,000 vote?
It was a small,
narrow victory.
Yeah.
See, I don't think Healey would have ran, though, if Charlie ran.
Maybe not.
Okay. But continue on.
And then the other big name is Marty Walsh. Apparently seems to be taking a look back home, maybe not enjoying things in D.C.
Well, yeah. Did he just get confirmed, or is he in the process of being?
No, he's in.
He's in.
Secretary of Labor.
Yeah.
Do they not like the office they gave him?
I don't know.
Okay. Dave, your thoughts?
In addition to what Justin said, I guess on the Republican side, you'd have to give Jeff Deal the edge right now, and I think he's got some momentum. Jeff has, with some notable exceptions, I think a lot of goodwill amongst the rank and file and the activists, the conservative activists. And I don't think from purely in IRA, I don't think he would particularly hurt. He was very popular in all three towns that I represent. So in our area, he does well. Statewide, I'm not sure how he would do. And you have to look at whether or not there will not be some type of independent candidate who potentially, if you had somebody popular or even charismatic, unknown now, I would imagine it would probably come from the left, who could run against, particularly if somebody like Marty Walsh is the nominee, you could have a pretty healthy three-way race. But on the Republican side, I don't know, maybe I'm sure Beth Lindstrom would draw some interest. John Kingston might draw some in. So the two people that ran against Deal, I mean, I think if one of them were running, it could potentially make some difference.
Do you feel that they have the gravitas of that?
Oh, I think, to be honest with you, I think people grow into the job, and that's been, a canard ever since, you know, every president, it'll be Carter or Reagan or Clinton, that, you know, they will grow into the job. They will surround themselves with qualified people. And the Commonwealth will survive. So
you're talking about a $48 billion, you know, business called the Commonwealth of Massachusetts.
True, but the $48 billion is, you know, we walk in there, and I know, you know, the esteemed rep from to my south here is because I can't remember, they've moved around your district so much.
Not that much.
Yeah,
not I as still much have as six towns.
That's
Dave.
True. Yeah. not as much as we feel. Well, that's why I hesitate, because I can't remember all. You know,
it's quite sprawling.
It is sprawling.
But
yes.
much to our, you know, when you get done with the budget, so much is spoken for that is there's not a whole lot to spread around. You know, we have debt service, and we have service to pensions, and then we've got to pay for the all of the people that we employ. So by the time you get done, there's not a whole lot of that to really, you know, move around.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you something. First of all, we could do a unity ticket, Rep Lenacha, Rep Matt Muratori. They can figure out who
Did
gets...
Did you just get that text too, Jared?
If he's listening. You know, they can arm wrestle who gets to be governor. But I will say, you know, obviously, as Rep DeCoste alluded to, Jeff Deal is our only candidate. I don't think that's going to stay. I think Rep Deal, while he has endeared himself to a lot of the rank-and-file activists, he ran for U.S. Senate. I think he benefited a little bit from actually having Charlie Baker running for governor as well. 36% performance, couldn't really raise the money to put together a statewide apparatus. There could be, I like Rep DeCoste entering in the John Kingston, Beth Lindstrom type. That could indeed happen. I'll give you a name that was floated and I think is kaput, Worcester County Sheriff Lou Evangelitis. My understanding is he called the governor, and the governor more or less suggested staying sheriff might be a better route for him. But another one that's getting a lot of chatter, and I think there's legitimate legs to it, is Taunton Mayor Sean O'Connell.
Oh my goodness!
There is a significant amount of legs to that, which is would be an interesting. As I quipped with a really good activist friend of mine who always loved Rep Deal and Rep O'Connell, I go, isn't that going to be like watching your parents divorce right before your very eyes? Like, how would that work for you?
Sure.
One of the things I find extremely interesting, though, is obviously Charlie not running leaves the governorship wide open, but Karen not running for lieutenant governor either. I haven't heard a single Republican make a peep about potentially running for lieutenant governor. There have been sort of some of the rumors that Rep Deal may have tapped an Agawam city councilor to be his running mate. But when it comes to Rep Deal, he predicated a lot of his campaign on being anti everything Charlie's done the last 19 months.
Right.
Well, that is now eliminated. You're not running against that anymore. So what are you running for now? What is your foil?
He almost like you're starting over.
It's literally starting over. And he went for the Trump endorsement, I think, as a means of sort of satisfying what some of the party wanted to do.
Is that hedging your bets, though?
Am I hedging my bets?
No. Is that by having the Donald
Trump? Well, so having the Trump endorsement certainly would have aided him in a primary.
Yeah.
That is going to destroy him in a general election. And I think there's also an opportunity now. There are a lot of Republicans. I know they're a vocal minority within the party that the Trump, not a vocal minority, but there are a lot of Republicans who voted for President Trump and supported him, but now that he's out of office, it's sort of like, well, it's time to move on, right? Like, you can't keep looking backwards. So I think there will be another Republican or two that emerge that have legitimate campaigns, and I think it'll be an interesting dichotomy to watch as it plays out, but certainly it'll be tough for any Republican stepping forward to try and take on Representative Deal. He ran statewide before. He had the gas tax question before that. He has built a statewide type organization. Unfortunately, I think going so hard for Trump as a means of chasing Governor Baker out will ultimately, potentially, could be wrong, but would ultimately hamper his chances at winning the whole thing.
So what if I throw out your current speaker, Mr. Mariano?
Oh.
Right? Or here's another name I'm going to throw out there, and I wouldn't discount it. I'm just going to throw it out there. Knowing that his wife ran for Senate up in New Hampshire. How about Scott Brown?
Interesting. Well, his wife is now running for Congress, so right. That might be an interesting thing.
That would be interesting.
That would be interesting, though. She's running for Congress in New Hampshire. He runs for governor in Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, had he stuck around here, that probably could be the type. Probably could be a candidate that could beat Jeff in the primary and be moderate enough that he could
dueling
potentially...
dueling vehicles. Well, that's a good truck point. Versus the Bronco.
And personally, I think you're going to get two second-tier candidates. I don't think that... the mayor's going to run, and I don't think that our former mayor Walsh is going to run, and I don't think that the attorney general is going to run for a number of reasons.
Oh. Is there avoided leadership?
And I think you're going to have. You could potentially have Jeff Deal versus, you know, Senator Chang Diaz,
and then it'll become Governor Chang Diaz.
And then you would have a. I'm not so sure in that case you would, but you could have potentially a strong independent from somewhere stepping up.
Well, so the thing is, though, and the reason why I said it so definitively is I think Glenn Youngkin in Virginia gave the blueprint for Republicans running across the country on how to handle the Donald Trump factor, right? And I think going for the full-throated endorsement wasn't what Glenn Youngkin did. He certainly didn't disavow the president, and he's a former president, and he shouldn't. But I think Jeff's full-throated support and endorsement from Donald Trump will just be, I mean, just you'll see the ads. You can see no matter who the Democrat is, it's just going to be Donald Trump all day and all night.
Well, I would ask this, though. Do you feel that any Democrat, let's say Maura Healey, Marty Walsh, are not an X factor in this? Is there still a Biden residual? Can a Democrat take back the governorcy of the Commonwealth, knowing that it's been in the hands of a Republican for two terms?
I certainly think so, because Charlie Baker was able to win support from both sides in his races. I think that a Jeff Deal running, or even any of the other names that have been tossed out here, is more of a Trump-aligned Republican than we've seen run here in a long time, considering that Charlie Baker ran the last three times.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
Yeah. So, but it is interesting that I think of the current candidates in the race, I think Jeff Deal is the only one who's run statewide before.
He is.
So currently in the race.
Currently. But if Mara jumps Mara, in this,
yeah.
Right.
She would, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear that Dave doesn't think that Mara will run. So, you know, I think the Commonwealth is going to thrive. I think Attorney General Maura Healey will make that happen. It's interesting that we have so many Democrats running for lieutenant governor.
Right.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. And we have none.
and I don't mean to say this to be demeaning, but I'll take the second banana job. It's like, that's what it sounds like.
Well, I mean, it's interesting, not to interrupt Representative Lenatra. I think, you know, a couple of other names. I think Scott Brown, of course, Andrew Lelling would be another name on the Republican side. I will disagree with my friend and colleague, Rep. DeCost, on Maura Healey. I think she does jump in.
How about Coakley?
No,
is Coakley
I don't
done?
Think so.
Didn't she take a job with
Jewel?
Yeah.
Jewel,
yeah, I think that
she's with Jewel.
Exactly. What I think will be interesting to watch play out, especially for Republicans in Massachusetts, is we're going to be sitting here on election night watching what I think is going to probably be a pretty significant red wave nationally. And your predecessor host of this program, Senator Bob Hedlund, had a quote from former Senate President Therese Murray talking about the red
That's
wave
a name.
Hitting
at
Therese Murray. There you go.
You saw my hand,
former Senate President Murray.
I think, wouldn't you? I mean, you worked with Bob.
Oh, with Mayor Hedlund.
Mayor Hedlund. Right?
That would be a really interesting thing to see. He's got some of the cachet. He has the executive experience. I would support him, of course.
And he's more of a moderate. He's not
because vegetarian more
I think,
than
okay.
anything.
All right, so you just called him a rhino. But anyways.
Well, we all are.
Bob,
I
did not call you a rhino.
Right. We're all rhinos in this state party. But I think to the point where someone like Scott Brown or Andrew Lelling would be interesting candidates, of course, more Andrew Lelling because Scott Brown lives in New Hampshire now, is they obviously sort of worked for Trump, but they didn't work for him in sort of that political way. Of course, Scott Brown was an ambassador and Andrew Lelling was the former U.S. attorney. I think what will end up happening is it's going to be really difficult, even if it's Jeff Deal ultimately is the nominee, what will be extremely difficult to overcome against Attorney General Maura Healey is we will be on the cusp of Massachusetts of electing the first female governor, the first openly lesbian governor. Of course, acting Governor Jane Swift, but she was never elected governor. So you're going to be up against a fairy tale storyline for Massachusetts politics that I don't think, and I don't even think Lieutenant Governor Polito could have overcome that firepower. I think she probably would have been our best shot at overcoming that as Republicans. But that's going to be a really difficult narrative, and it's going to be, I think, frustrating for Republicans in Massachusetts because we've kind of already played this out. You know, we nominated Rep Deal to run against Elizabeth Warren because a lot of Republicans have said, we don't nominate conservatives, and that's why we lose. Yet you had literally on the same night, Elizabeth Warren and Charlie Baker each getting like 65 to 67% of the vote, and their opponents getting 30-something. Sure. So I think it's played out, and I think that's going to be the... That's going to be what plays out next year, unless somebody kind of comes out of nowhere. And, you know, to Rep. DeCoe's point, if Mara Healey doesn't run, it's certainly a wide open race. But I think she's going to run, and she is the early heavy favorite. And Republicans in this state will watch us lose governor, lieutenant governor. A lot of rep and senate seats could go down as well.
But would she?
All the while, the national party does so well.
What would you consider the attorney general? Would you feel that she's a moderate Democrat? Or would you say that she's a progressive Democrat?
From my view where I'm sitting, I think
right,
she,
like when I asked Justin in
right, so I think she's more technical than the current Democrats that are running, as in she's obviously served in a constitutional role. She's managed that office. I think if you were to really pigeonhole her ideology, she's probably falls somewhere in between moderate to progressive.
Okay.
I think she definitely has a lot of progressive leanings. She spent 4 years suing President Trump, but of course, Republican attorney generals across the country now sue President Biden, so I don't really enter that into the calculus.
Okay.
But I think she's significantly more left than Governor Patrick was. So it'll be interesting to see how she governs and how that triumvirate with her, President Spilka, and Speaker Mariano, how that eventually plays out. Because it's always been my belief, and I'm sure my Democrat friends will disagree, that the Speaker and the Senate President have generally liked Republican governors because it's allowed them to have sort of that foil for themselves to keep control in the legislature.
And I was just going to add that, yeah, I agree with my colleagues here. Mara Healey does kind of toe the line between, and you've got progressive candidates and moderate Democratic candidates alike seeking her endorsement and support and fundraising for us. So,
would that be important for her to be successful in a gubernatorial race?
I think it depends on who her opponent is. But
I agree. I think she falls somewhere in between the progressives and the moderate. You know, she's done a fantastic job as her role as Attorney General, and I would, you know, love to see her as the next governor.
Rep. DeCoe, you get the final word. You will not be Jared Valenzuela. You will get the last word. Anything you want to kind of say in closing, whether it's on Mara Healey or
I still
or
would
other.
Be willing to, having been one up now on Rep. Sullivan for the betting on the Bulldogs, I'd be willing to bet at this point we end up with two, not to diminish them, but two second-tiered candidates. I think it's going to be probably Jeff Deal, and I think it's going to be something other than Marty or Mora for governor.
Right, we'll have to wait and see. How about this? Let's make a little small pact here.
Yes.
Right, that we'll all come together when we have a little bit more information, that we all get together and we do another segment or two about this.
Always love joining you on Monday night, Kevin.
Excellent.
Absolutely. I'll be back.
Okay. Dave?
Yes, absolutely.
You'll bring more yummy pizza.
I will.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. And shout out to the Norwell House of Pizza.
Fantastic pizza.
This segment's what? No, I'm kidding. No.
And finally, Rep. Lenatra, thank you so much for coming as well.
Oh, my pleasure.
Being here. And so that was a great conversation. That does it for hour number one. We're going to step aside. And when we come back, I'm not lying, hour number two right here, 95.9 WATD. You're tuned in to Monday Night Talk.
ATD FM Marshfield, WBMS Brockton. This is the South Shore's radio station, 95.9 FM WATD. Streaming online at 95.9WATD.com. And with your smart speaker, just by saying play WATD.
Each year, about one out of two men and one out of three women will develop cancer. But there's good news. Today's cancer survival odds are much better than 2 or even 3 years ago. Things move that fast. So if you're diagnosed, be sure to have someone in your corner who is on top of all the latest cancer treatments and techniques, the latest research, the newest equipment, all the newest medicines available through clinical trials. And speaking of corners, here's more good news. Advanced cancer care is now just around the corner. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare treats patients locally, with all oncology services and specialties conveniently housed under one roof. The center is affiliated with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, so you'll be seen by Harvard Medical faculty physicians and oncologists. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare, in affiliation with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. Cancer has just met its match. Find out why at mysignaturecare.org/cancercare.
Hey, it's John Shea here from Almost Famous Radio, introducing you to independent bands and musicians from across New England. Every Tuesday night, 8 till 10, brought to you by Tiny and Sons Glass. Tomorrow night, another full show for you, tons of new music and upcoming events to let you know about, and we'll be joined on the Tiny stage by singer-songwriter Kaylee Fetterman. That's tomorrow, 8 till 10, right here on 95.9 WATD and always streaming at 95.9WATD.com.
Talk continues all week long. Go to 95.9WATD.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
We return for another interesting segment here on Monday Night Talk. They're all interesting topics and conversations. It's just a matter of what the topic is and who the conversation is with. For this particular segment, I thought it would be best, seeing that it is the holiday season, and a lot of us, it's frantic because the holidays come upon us really quick. And a lot of times we have to be resourceful, especially knowing that a lot of the things that you may be looking for this holiday season may be stuck on a container somewhere, and there might be shortages. A lot of folks turn to online shopping. We're fortunate today to be speaking with the chief spokesperson for the local Better Business Bureau, Paula Fleming, to talk a little bit about a study that they have conducted in regards to online scams and how to better protect you. Paula, I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
It's my pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
So let's get right into the nuts and bolts of this. When, where, and how did the Better Business Bureau decide to launch an investigation into online issues when it came to scams?
Sure. Well, that's a great question. As you know, a shift happened during COVID-19 where online shopping was at an all-time high. And the Better Business Bureau across the United States put together this massive investigative study, which is an in-depth study surrounding online shopping. And there are obviously, as you alluded to, significant global supply chain issues. It's an actual crisis, and a resurging economy have all created a recipe really for a break in the holiday shopping season. So we're really addressing right now, as people have already begun to online shop, in-store shopping, that online shopping fraud and the role of social media is a really important point to hone in on during this holiday season and make your viewers and listeners aware of the situation. Online shopping fraud has been growing for several years, but again, according to the Better Business Bureau, and this is across United States, it dramatically increased during the pandemic as people were stuck at home and shopping online.
And would you say that social media, or would the report, the investigative study itself, point to social media as a conductor?
Yes, unfortunately, the Better Business Bureau did find that it was common for people to begin the transaction on social media platforms such as Facebook and Instagram. And actually, it was a 70% of the time that we have found that this is where the scam initiated. Obviously, these fraudsters are very intelligent, and they understand how Facebook can target shoppers, and they actually have developed strategies to reach those likely to be interested in buying a specific product this holiday season, whether it be for themselves or their children or significant others, etc.
So when we talk fraud, are we talking that they'll process a credit card and not provide any type of product, or are we talking that they would take payments, but what they would send back to the consumer wasn't necessarily what they were seeking?
We're talking about those two things. We're talking about counterfeit goods. We're talking about promises of delivery prior to the holidays, when in fact, as you had mentioned, there's significant issues where they're not even able to get here. So it's a variety of different issues. Counterfeit goods, promises of delivery by holiday season, promises of, you know, not even counterfeit goods, but claims that they'll give you the hot item of the year for the holiday season, and then you never receive anything. So this is really covering all different issues of fraud in regards to online.
Now, is this only domestic fraud? Or is this foreign and global fraud we're talking here?
No, we're talking, you know, we looked at online purchase scams regarding a variety of factors. I mentioned counterfeit goods. China has actually blocked its people from using Facebook's social media platform in China. It's really an in-depth study, and it goes across all different. We look at Romania, U.S., Canada. We work with and continue to work with law enforcement agencies. There have actually been, in 2020, the U.S. custom agency seized $1.3 billion in counterfeit goods, which led to the arrest of over 200 individuals and secured almost 100 convictions, which is really, you know, great to see that people are held accountable for this. Although the United States, the Better Business Bureau is throughout the United States, Canada, and Mexico, we work in conjunction with different law enforcement agencies. And this survey specifically looks at everything in regards to online shopping and fraud.
I actually will share a couple of my stories because I feel as though I was a victim of said fraud as well myself. But does the report supply examples or stories of folks who fell victim to kind of basically push this report over the line and really for it to resonate with folks?
Yeah, we do, unfortunately. We talk about a woman from Missouri who ordered a decanter and two cups via a Facebook ad and only received one cup and not the decanter. So yeah, we really dig into examples. Obviously, we have the B2B scam tracker we've talked about several times, and that is where you can review scams that are transpiring locally or globally across the United States, Canada, and Mexico. And that's where people look to see what's transpiring in their community, but also if they feel as though they've been victim of a scam, they can report it there. That being said, we are just one agency that handles scams. So we obviously do work with the different government agencies to be on top of trends and information that's happening within our communities.
Yeah, myself, I had two different items that I saw on Facebook. There was a Facebook ad. It didn't have any foreign appeal. There was nothing that gave me red flags that said, uh-oh, this is something that is coming from a foreign company. It looked as though, or foreign country as well. It had all the looks as though it was something that was being produced here in the States and that I would be able to get quickly and readily. The two things were a camera, a micro camera. And the second one was pandemic based. There were these special unique masks that you could get that kind of was all self-contained and it was anti-fog. I wear lenses, I wear glasses, and these were supposed to prevent having to worry about that. Anybody who wears glasses, who are visually challenged, know what I'm talking about. When you go to put a mask on, no matter what you do, you are always, you know, wiping your glasses or finding a way to set them on your mask so they don't fog up. And so I ordered both of these items. It took a long time for me to receive my product. Mm-hmm. I did receive product, but mm-hmm. It wasn't the product I was seeking. The camera mm-hmm. had faulty software. I couldn't contact anybody. As far as the mask took literally more than 3 months, three to three and a half months for me to receive. And when I would send messages to the company, and again, same thing. It looked like an American company until I had to send an email. Come to find out, it was from, I'm not sure if it was Taiwan, it was China, or anything in that particular region. But they could not find my order. They didn't know what I was talking about. And then finally, one day, I get this mashed up box that shows up, and these masks did not work.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I do wear glasses, but during this pandemic, I have gravitated 99.9% of the time to contacts just for that reason.
And have you found success that you don't have to worry about that with the, or do your contacts have issues with masks?
No issues with these contacts. But with glasses, the steaming and it was so difficult. So yeah, you'll see me most often with contacts now.
So again, if folks are just tuning in, we are privileged to be speaking with Paula Fleming. She is the chief spokesperson for the local Better Business Bureau. And we are talking about an investigation that the BBB did in regards to online scams. And as I kind of teased the conversation, this is that if you are shopping online for your holiday gifts, be buyer, beware. And I don't want to give away any of the secrets, because that's why Paula's here, is just kind of give us some of the recommendations and other information in regards to this. What recommendations did this particular study make, whether in generalization to online shopping or as far as things that maybe other organizations can do to safeguard consumers?
Well, it's important that when you are on these different social media platforms, that you don't just click on any ad and provide your financial and personal information. We really encourage people, if you see a deal that sparks your interest, take it off the platform, go directly to the website, and take your time and do some research. You know, find out a little bit about the business. You can obviously look at BBB.org, read customer reviews, and really, a little bit of research can get you a long way and save you a lot of hassle. We always encourage people, and frankly urge people, to use a credit card when making purchases online and not a debit card. And obviously never wire money or use any third-party apps, because it just is an extra layer of precaution for you to use. While Facebook is a great, and Instagram and all the social media platforms are really a good avenue to communicate, to target your audience, Better Business Bureau, we use it to get our messaging out. You can never be too cautious on who is actually advertising to you, because there are a lot of mirror websites. So someone that may look like the Better Business Bureau, but in fact aren't. And some red flags that you can look for there are check for grammatical errors, check to make sure that the website doesn't, or the URL doesn't have any misspellings within it. And again, take it off the platform and do a quick Google search or go directly to the website if you know it.
What about as far as anything that the Better Business Bureau has done in regards to organizations? Has there been anything sent to the Facebooks or any kind of consumer fraud organizations to ask them to keep a lookout and make them aware of the study?
Oh, most definitely, yes. We do work with all the different platforms and make them aware, especially if we see a trend in complaints, something that has really taken over. And I'd like to actually touch upon those, if I may.
Yes.
Especially because it's the holiday season, and talk about the three categories that primarily BBB has seen and that are part of this study in regards to scams. And I'm sure you're not surprised that it's the holiday season and pet scams are actually going to increase as we get closer. And that is actually, pet scams are accounting for 35% of the scam tracker reports about online shopping in 2021.
Wait, so like what particular items are they targeting U.S. consumers with? Well, I mean, because I'm a pet lover, I actually have two dogs, and I'm more susceptible to buy things that I may see online for, you know, my two pets.
So this is specifically that we've received over 100 reports on people that have actually tried to purchase a pet. So not necessarily like merchandise for the pet, but an actual pet. In 2019, we had over 100 complaints, but in 2020, we had over 4,000 complaints. So that's a significant increase. We found that during the pandemic, a lot of people were staying home and found it a great time to get a pet because they were home, could train a pet. And unfortunately, they were left without any pet because it was a scam. So scammers take money from the victims, but no pet is actually delivered. And that is one of the top scams that we have seen. And it's obviously continuing to increase. And unfortunately, I don't see it an end in sight for that, which is why we're encouraging people that if you see ads online, if you see cute pictures of puppies that entice you, make sure you vet the business, do some research, and take it off the social media platform.
You know, I want to say in regards to Facebook, has there been direct conversations with Facebook in regards for them to better vet their advertising, or is it they leave that all up to, you know, artificial intelligence, the bots, to, you know, allow some advertisements to be posted and not monitored as well as others?
Well, as you know, you brought up Facebook and Instagram are obviously an attractive area for scam artists because Facebook is the biggest social network worldwide. It's roughly has 2.9 billion active users. So I think they're doing their best they can, but as the Better Business Bureau has found too, I often say, you know, it's job security for me because as soon as we figure out a scam, there's a different iteration or variation of said scam. So it's a constant, you know, trying to make sure that these don't continue to transpire, but it's constant. It's an evolution. And although I do believe Facebook is doing its best effort, it's nearly impossible to keep track. Every time you shut something down, one comes up. So we do work, the Better Business Bureau has worked with many of the different platforms to try and stop this.
It's almost like a virus. These thieves and they are able to create a new variant or a new avenue to be able to catch the eye of someone who is unsuspecting. It's very interesting.
It is. And many victims and small businesses do say, and it's within the study, that they believe Facebook and Instagram can do more to prevent the widespread fraud. There's talk in this study, and again, it's an extremely in-depth study of a class action that was recently filed in the U.S. federal court against Facebook, contending that it is complicit in fraudulent sales and fails to abide by its own policies in addressing them. But I would urge your listeners, viewers, to go and read the report because it's really an in-depth, and we're just scratching at the surface here. But again, as a Better Business Bureau as a whole, we try to do our best to stay on top of trends, educate people within the United States, Canada, Mexico on what's transpiring and arm them with the knowledge so they don't fall victim to the scams.
What is the best way to report online fraud? So information like that that has been compiled by the Better Business Bureau can be put into such report to, you know, share it with everybody, with a wider viewing and listening audience.
Right. So there's a variety of different areas in which you can, or rather agencies. So the Better Business Bureau, you can file a complaint or a report of a scam directly going to BBB.org. There's obviously the FTC, which is the Federal Trade Commission, and that's reportfraud.ftc.gov. There's the National Intellectual Property Rights Center. There's Facebook directly. There's Instagram directly, Amazon, Google, PayPal. And obviously, you can go directly through your credit card agency if that you have to dispute a charge or feel as though you've been a victim of fraud or just unhappy with the purchase that was made and are unable to, as you mentioned, get in touch with said business if it isn't a scam to return it. So there's a number of avenues you as a consumer can take. It is my hope that this report will arm you with knowledge so that you don't fall victim to a scam and don't have to take that avenue. But obviously, even with all the research in the world, some of us do fall victim to it happening. So it's not to say that, you know, you didn't do a good job, because sometimes they are just in fact too good. And we do fall victim to the scams that are transpiring.
I feel that like a crux of our conversation here, a lot of it has targeted Facebook/Instagram. And I believe that they're somehow under the same umbrella. But even an organization or a company like Amazon, which is also another global supplier, can also be susceptible to this counterfeit process, correct?
Yes, most definitely. I mean, really, there's any business is susceptible to scams. And these scam artists just use the well-known names. And as you know, Amazon is has significantly got more popular during the pandemic. And who doesn't have an Amazon account? I don't know many people. So yes, anybody is susceptible. And typically the larger names, well-known names, that they're targeting them and using them to scam people, whether it's text messaging, you know, that you have a delivery and you click on it, or there's an email, confirm your delivery, and then you go and you're taken off into, you know, a world that you don't even realize that you're just start clicking. So yeah, again, if you have an email, a phone call, a text message, if you're on a social media platform, take it off of the platform. Do not respond to the text. Do not give personal information out over the phone. I cannot reiterate it enough. You want to go directly, log on to your Amazon account. You'll find all your information there. You can call Amazon. And it continues, like, whatever you're making a purchase on, the best thing to do is just to go directly to, whether it's Amazon or a smaller business, who you purchased from, or if you have questions in regards to a product, go directly to them.
And what's even more important, you might have mentioned this earlier, is credit cards these days are doing their best to protect those who have credit under them and can also get involved with this as well.
Right. Yes, you're exactly correct. And the reason I just want to dive a little bit deeper into credit card versus debit card, because a lot of people are confused and they are like, well, we don't want to build up debt. And I understand that, but there's a layer of protection when you use a credit card in regards to disputing a charge versus when you're using a bank card and a debit card, which comes, you know, directly out of the your bank account. And then it's more difficult to dispute the charge through the bank. So that is one layer of it. The other layer is, if you keep your online transactions separate, it's easier to say, okay, I have now received the purchase, here's the receipt, here's the charge on the credit card, and just to keep it organized. We always encourage people to use one credit card for online transactions.
We find that folks who are kind of newer to technology and online services to be the ones who are more susceptible than the ones who are savvy, or do you find that across the board, does the report find across the board that it doesn't matter how tech savvy or how smart you are, that there's always a scam that will get somebody when it comes to a counterfeit product?
You know, that's an interesting question, because when I first started at the Better Business Bureau 20 years ago, it was always that we focused on seniors were the ones that were scammed, but we're actually seeing it flip a little bit, because we're finding that people are trusting and they're more tech savvy, so they're more I think they're quicker to use, you know, whether it's the Venmos and the different platforms, are more tech savvy and they're trusting and they're just doing it quickly and not taking the time to do the research. So I would say that it's evening out in regards, especially here in New England, from what I see regarding scams.
Anything that we haven't touched upon in our conversation, but you feel is very valuable to the folks who are tuned into this particular program?
I would just encourage people to go to BBB.org. There's information in regards to this fake online and fraud, the study that we have done most recently. But there's also information on, you know, the holiday season, scams that are transpiring, more specifically, and tips if you're holiday shopping, and also checking out businesses. You can go right to BBB.org, free 24 hours a day, and research a charity or a business prior to making a purchasing decision. So I would encourage people to do that.
But I would ask you a personal question as somebody who is you folks are just tuning in, I apologize. We've been privileged to be speaking with Paula Fleming, who is the chief spokesperson for a local Better Business Bureau, Seeing a report like this, does this make you a little apprehensive to doing online shopping?
Yes. Yes, because, you know, I always go on and say, take 5 or 10 minutes, and then I'll have someone call me or send me a social media and say, well, I did what you said, and I did the research, and I was still scammed. So as I mentioned, you know, doing research doesn't protect you everyone 100% of the people 100% of the time, because these scam artists are very, very savvy. So yes, I too can get caught up in the busy day and the hustle and bustle of the day, and then I, you know, find myself looking at my social media platforms and looking at my teenager's request for his number one gift, and, you know, go, if I finally find it, and really quickly I have to stop myself and say, all right, stop, you have to do research. Is this a legitimate business? You know, what is the return policy? Practice what you preach, type of thing. And so, yes, I think after 20 years, I'm hesitant to even, and maybe a little guarded in regards to any knocks at the door, any, you know, mail that I open up, any emails, any text messages. It's unfortunate, but that's the world we live in.
Yeah, like you, I do a lot of conversations, a lot of interviews in this regard. You and I have done a couple of great interviews, and this is just yet another one to better inform folks. And like you, I'm very guarded, and I get it. I'm like, you know, you want to be able to, you want to be trusting, but unfortunately, the world that we live in, once we have one safeguard in place, there are individuals who will find ways around, you know, to be able to, you know, get your money or be able to get your vital information so that they can, you know, use your name and your credit history to be able to gain on their own. So it's definitely interesting. If folks want to find out about some of the latest scams, maybe they might want to read the full report on the findings of this investigation about online fraud. How can folks find out more information in regards to either the discussion we had or other studies that have been done by the BBB?
So you can go directly to bbb.org. To find this report, as well as all information that we've talked about today, and as well as agency information if you're interested in finding the FTC, the Attorney General's Office. Everything is available at bbb.org.
Paula, I want to thank you so much for sharing this information with the folks who've tuned in to the program, and I want to wish you and yours a happy, safe, and fraudulent-free holiday season.
Thank you so much. Same to you.
Okay, so we will now step aside, and coming up in just a couple of moments, more Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
That truck, it pays?
What?
The bumper sticker on that truck says it pays.
Pays? Pays what?
I can't quite read it. Oh, it pays to stay way back.
Ah, what was that?
The truck! Snap back a rock! Now I've got a broken windshield.
I'm Peter Brown of Tiny and Sons Auto Glass in Pembroke. It pays to stay way back. However, if your windshield is broken, just call 1-888-64-TINYS. And thank you.
You're always up for some fun with the family. So you order the essentials, a new board game, some baking supplies, and even a new projector for outdoor movie night. And with the Bank of America customized cash rewards credit card, you can choose to earn 3% cash back on online shopping, which could increase to up to 5.25% as a preferred rewards member. Rewards which you can put toward an extra treat that everyone will enjoy, like an old-fashioned popcorn machine. Visit bankofamerica.com/more rewarding and apply now. Copyright 2021 Bank of America Corporation.
This tech update is sponsored by Dell Small Business. Tech-centric gifts like a subscription to a streaming service will always be in stock. Got a gamer in your life? Gift them an Xbox Game Pass or a subscription to PlayStation Plus.
Dell Technologies end-of-year sale is the perfect time to upgrade. Save big on computers with Intel Core processors for your small business, plus free shipping. Call a Dell Technologies advisor at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
Be a part of the show. Call and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk.
Welcome back for the final segment of Monday Night Talk. This final segment is one of enlightenment, one that one of great interest. Any of you who recall, just about a month ago, we had our first fall. The one that I can remember, I don't ever remember the Boston Marathon being run or taking place in the fall because of COVID. We've had to make those changes. But some of us also remember the Boston Marathon for an incident that took place back in 2013, the Boston Marathon bombing. And my guest who's joining us right now so happens to be not only a survivor from that incident that took place in 2013, but she's also someone who's had to not only deal with the wounds that came from that day, but also other things that have caused her to have to look within for ways to be able to quality of life, to try to restore it if possible. Michelle LaRue is joining us. Is not only is she here to talk in regards to being a survivor, but more so to talk about being a spokesperson for Curaleaf's iCannabis campaign. Michelle, welcome to Monday Night Talk, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I very much appreciate it. I'm glad to be here.
Not to necessarily relive that day when I think it changed the world and I think astounded all of us here in the Boston area to think that there would be a terrorist attack. But what is it? How did life change for you on that fatal day?
Life changed drastically for me on that day. I was severely physically injured. I had open blast wounds to my left leg. My left arm was torn open from my armpit to my elbow, and both my eardrums were blown out. So I spent weeks in the hospital, and I had, within the first week in the hospital, I had three surgeries, multiple procedures during each surgery, and I continued on to have additional surgeries and went through the healing process for well over a year. So it was not an easy time in my life. And, it wasn't just physical injuries. It was also emotional and mental injuries, if you will. So it was a lot. It was a very confusing time in my life. It was also a time in my life where I think I realized how grateful you need to be every day that you wake up, that you are physically well, because in a matter of a second, it can be taken away from you and it doesn't have to be from a terrorist attack. So that was something that I hadn't really ever thought a lot about. And now it's something that I think about a lot.
I would ask you this. So as time has gone on and as the healing, I'm sure that the physical wounds have healed to a degree. Are there any further surgeries or the surgeries, are you done with any surgeries?
I'm up for another surgery on my left ear. I've had two prior surgeries on it, and it's unfortunately, it's just not taking well. So I don't have much hearing. Wear a hearing aid in my left ear, and my right arm, at some point, I will have to have more scar tissue removed because the injury was quite large and I have skin grafts and there's a lot of scar tissue that builds up that presses on the nerves. So I do suffer from quite a bit of nerve pain. So it's something, that I know will be in my future. My leg is... It does give me problems. I'm not really sure what more they could do. So I don't really know what will happen with that, but I run. So I can't complain. I can run. I can work out. I'm physically very strong, but I do, there are times when it's bothering me a lot. But you know, you just, I think when you go through something like this, even if you're living with some pain, you have so much gratitude for not that it wasn't worse, that it's hard to feel sorry for myself. So I don't.
So I would ask you, is the physical part, you know, is one thing, but then feeling the pain, what has it been like to at least try to find comfort depending on what they've, what you've been provided for certain medications?
So for me, the medications just didn't work well for me for many reasons. You know, as far as nerve pain goes, we tried a few things. Again, they didn't really work for me. So I've just sort of learned to deal with it. Again, this is where, so I guess I'll start kind of going into the sleep problem. So for me, with my PTSD and anxiety, I did suffer from some anxiety prior to the bombing. But after the bombing, it just was very hard to deal with. And it affected my sleep to a degree that I've never experienced. I've always been someone, my mom used to joke that it didn't matter where we were, I would always fall asleep within a minute of being put to bed. And I was like that my entire life. And after the bombing, I couldn't sleep. I had, you know, trauma dreams. I still have trauma dreams. It's not as often, but I still have them. It tends to happen more when I have a high level of stress going on. But my sleep just, it got to be so bad that I was living on 2 hours of sleep a night for quite a few years. And the medications they would give me were sometimes the warning labels made me not want to take them. And a lot of them, to be honest, made me feel horrible in the morning. I would wake up and I would constantly feel like I was trying to shake it off. And it would take me, you know, an hour to hours to feel like I was awake. And, you know, I'm the kind of person, I get up at 5 a.m. and work out, and I felt like I was sleepwalking. It was a horrible feeling. And that's when I was talking to a veteran friend, and he did multiple tours, you know, in the Middle East, and excuse me, and he had some of the same issues. And he started talking to me about cannabis that had higher CBD levels in it, which I didn't really know was a thing. I know about CBD, of course, but I didn't realize you could use cannabis, like an edible, if you will, like that had CBD and THC in it, and that you could play around with the ratios to figure out what worked for your body. And what I was able to discover was that if I used, you know, a cannabis product that had a high CBD content and still had THC, but at a lower level, it put me to sleep, and it puts me to sleep really well. And I stay asleep for more hours than I was getting before. And I don't feel horrible in the morning. I can get up, I can go running, I can be present in my life and not feel like I'm trying to shake something off and not feel medicated, if you will.
You are just tuning in. We are privileged to be speaking with Michelle LaRue. And Michelle is not only a Boston Marathon survivor, but she also is a spokesperson for Curaleaf and their iCannabis campaign. Now, what's the interesting question I'm going to ask you is knowing that there has long been a stigmatism around cannabis and marijuana, and it slowly seems as though that's lifting per se. Was there anything within your, you know, that you had to make a decision, or was it a matter of, you know what, if I'm getting good advice from somebody who's had success, I'm going to try this?
No, I immediately tried it. But I will say, I immediately tried it, but I did not talk about trying it. I did not tell people, because again, there was a stigma around it. And I was definitely myself even hesitant to talk about it, because I thought, goodness, what will someone think? That, are they going to think, you know, who knows what someone could think, because there are some, I think they are going away. So I don't know whether I use is or are, like, but yes, I, I was kind of using it in secret, if you will, like just, you know, close friends and family knew that I was trying this. But no, I did not hesitate because I was at a point where I was really struggling and trying to be a mom and work a demanding job and live my life. It was really hard when you're not sleeping. And I felt like no sleep was actually making my anxiety and PTSD worse. And it just wasn't, I couldn't continue living that way. So I started using it and it immediately started working for me.
So I would ask you this is, could you recall that first night that you fully recharged your batteries where you weren't just sleeping for 2 hours? What was that like?
I got like about 5 hours of sleep straight. I fell asleep very quickly and I slept for about 5 hours straight. And I remember waking up and thinking, what time is it? And then going back to sleep, because that also is another challenge. If I would fall asleep, if I woke up, which I always did, I could not fall back asleep. And I remember thinking, like when I woke up, you know, in the morning after the night had gone by, was I didn't feel awful. I didn't feel any after effects of having used it. And that was key for me. The other medications that I had tried, some of them did help me sleep, but it wasn't worth the feeling that I had when I'd wake up in the morning. And by using cannabis, that wasn't there. I can get up in the morning and go for a 5-mile run and feel normal. And that's amazing. And that was part of the reason why when I was approached about this iCannabis campaign, I was nervous. I was nervous because, you know, a lot of people I do know don't know that I use cannabis. And I was a little intimidated at the thought of people knowing, but then I thought, you know what? It's more important that I share my story about this because there could be other people suffering similar issues that don't realize this is an option and that it's okay if you try this option. It should not be taboo. This should be something I feel that doctors bring up as an option. And unfortunately, that's not something that I see that happens. Maybe it does, but my hope is that someday that all doctors use this as an option for their patients if it's something that would help them.
So what I would ask you was there a little experimenting at first? I mean, how did you go about the process? If somebody is listening and they are suffering from PTSD and they're like, oh my goodness. So what was it like to try to get it to a proper amount of milligrams that you took that you saw success, repeated success?
So I had somebody to help me. So I did have a very close veteran friend that was there to help me. And he was kind of doing it for me, helping me through the process. So for me, I feel I do have my medical card. So I think that for someone that may want to try this, I think the important thing is that they realize that some of these dispensaries that have medical cannabis or a medical side, or like the one I go to is all medical, you can have a consultation. You can sit down with somebody and talk to them about what you need help with or what, you know, what issues you're having. And they will do their best with their knowledge and their experience to help find a product that is good for your issue, your symptoms, whatever it may be. And I think sometimes that might be a little intimidating because people don't know that it's, you know, I think going into a dispensary is intimidating in the fact that some people don't know what to expect. They don't know what they're going to do when they go in there. They may be overwhelmed. I don't know what to get. And then there's different strands. So I think that is overwhelming for someone that doesn't know. So I think it's really important that you find a facility that you know that you can sit down with someone and talk to them about what your options are. And, you know, I've been into a few dispensaries and they're all very kind and very understanding. And you can have conversations. And that's important to know because, again, I don't think everyone knows that. And even the thought years ago of going into one, that seemed intimidating to me as well. And now I look back and I kind of go, geez, like, why didn't I do this sooner? So my advice to somebody would be to seek out a place where you can talk to someone and, you know, possibly even sit down with them, because it is very helpful.
So I would ask you, Michelle, is how long has this campaign been ongoing for Curaleaf, and how long have you been a spokesperson? Has it been a long endeavor, or is this something new?
I just started with them earlier this year, so it's relatively new, and it's great. They have so many great people involved, and you know, everybody's story is different and unique in their own right, and people all use it for different reasons, and I think it's a campaign worth checking out, because someone may be able to, you know, read about somebody's story or hear their story and realize that maybe they can relate to it. So I think that this campaign is incredibly important, and I'm glad to be a part of it, because I really like how they rolled it out and the compassion and the understanding that is around this campaign. It's something that I do believe will help break some of the stigma of cannabis.
Again, we are speaking with Michelle LaRue. She is not only a Boston Marathon survivor, but she is also a spokesperson for Curaleaf's iCannabis campaign. And that's what we're talking about. We're kind of trying to build the story here so you understand what Michelle has endured, you know, during an event that nobody would know. None of us have a crystal ball. We would be able to avoid that. But how the trials and tribulations, and how she's gotten here, and how she's trying to help others who might be suffering similar situations in regards to trying to get some sleep, alleviate themselves from pain. I was fortunate enough to pull up a Boston Herald op-ed piece that she did on October 8th, just prior to the stepping off of the Boston Marathon in October. What was it like to put that together?
It can be a little intimidating when you're putting something together to be, you know, published, but it's, you know, I just have to be honest and speak from my heart about what I've experienced and share that and hope that, you know, that it reaches somebody and may help someone else. You know, I have spent years working with survivors of terrorism around the world, and, you know, I've also come to realize that there's many people that suffer from issues that are not related to terrorism that this could also help. So my hope is that, you know, maybe there are people that read these op-eds and can find something useful out of it for themselves.
It's interesting, and I'm going to read a paragraph from your op-ed. Since the Boston Marathon bombings, I've been on a mission to share my experiences with others around the world, especially those who have faced the worst of human nature, to show them there is still light, there is still hope. Mm-hmm. Touching words.
Thank you.
What I would ask you is what was it? Did you have a chance to either watch or be at the Boston Marathon, or did you participate in some way?
So this year I had a veteran friend run. So survivors, every year since the bombing, we've been given guest bibs by the Boston Athletic Association. So that's been absolutely incredible that they have done that for us. And this year I had a veteran friend of 20 plus years run on my bib. So that, I did go, I can't go down to Boylston Street. I've only been there one time since the bombing on Marathon Day. It's just too much for me. So we did stand out on the marathon course out in Newton and watched him around mile 18. So it actually was a really nice experience, to be honest with you. It was one of the first years, this year was one of the first years I stood out there and didn't think about the bombing. And I don't know if that's partly because partly because it was also in the fall, a different time of year. You know, it was a happy experience this year. And I left with a smile on my face. I had my son with me and we cheered him on, and it felt amazing. And every year I've tried to give my bib to either a U.S. veteran or to use it to raise money for a terrorism survivor group. So that also makes my heart happy to be able to do that as well.
Is there anything that I haven't asked you during our conversation here, but there's a tidbit of information that you feel is going to be helpful to anybody who's listening who might benefit from this conversation?
I mean, one thing I always say to people, and I feel like this is really important, is whatever you're going through in your life, whatever you've experienced, there's always somebody else out there that has experienced it as well. And I think that a peer-to-peer connection is probably one of the most important things in the healing process for anybody. And whether it's fighting cancer or being a victim of terrorism or whatever it may be, recovering from a car accident, it's really important to find somebody else that you can speak to that has gone through the same thing, because your family is amazing to have, doctors are amazing to have, but a peer-to-peer connection is something that I feel is very instrumental in the healing process. And in regards to cannabis, don't be afraid to explore that. Even if you feel like it's taboo, you should still explore that as an option, because you never know. If you are suffering, you should always explore any options that are available to you. And I really, truly hope that over time, this becomes a mainstream thing. I do believe it is becoming that, and I believe that it can help a lot of people.
Have you gleaned any success from the campaign yet? Have you had anybody approach you who've read your words or they've heard you and said thank you, that at least you've at least helped someone today?
Yes. And I will tell you, I have been both shocked and amazed by some of the people that I know that have come to me and said, hey, I use cannabis too. And I'm like, what? Like, it's amazing how we look at people and the way they look, or maybe what job they have or how they are in their life, and we just assume they would never use cannabis. And I'm sure someone that looks at me probably thinks the same thing. And we shouldn't think that. And it was very surprising to me in a good way. Some of the people that said to me, hey, I use this too. You know, I can't even tell you. It was crazy. And I've had a few people come to me as well, people that I know that have said, what do you use? Because this is what I'm suffering with. And I've had many friends, I would say at least a half a dozen, say, I have sleep issues because of X, Y, and Z. Do you think this could help me? So yeah, it's been kind of like, wow, I surprised and amazed. And it made me feel also, because of course I was a little nervous the first time I shared, because you know, it was, you know, the first time out of the gate and here I am. And the response I got was overwhelmingly positive. There was no negative reactions to it at all. And that made me very happy. And it also made me realize that a lot more people than we think are okay with this.
Now, the one thing I haven't asked you now, that you're taking cannabis, is it edible? And are you somebody who has like a particular flavor? And what it was, you know, is there a flavor that you have liked if you do edibles?
I do edibles, and I also use tincture, so which is like a liquid, if you will. So, no, I make my own edibles. So that's, you know, I buy the flower and then I make it into oil, and I bake with it. So that's, I can't smoke cannabis. I am a runner. So that's not an option for me, but, I know many people that use it all different ways. So to be honest with you too, I'm still exploring sometimes. There are many different things out there that, you know, I wasn't even aware of. I recently went into Curaleaf and they gave me this different type of edible. It was a gummy, and it was something that kicked in a little quicker, if you will, and I couldn't stay awake. And I was like, wow, this is good. So I'm still experimenting myself. And, it's definitely, you have to find what works with you. You definitely have to try different things to see what works best for you. You may think one thing works great, but then you may try something else and it may work even better. So yeah. And it feels like they're coming out with new things all the time. So
you definitely have to love technology. Well, we're basically out of time, but I cannot thank you enough for coming on this radio program, sharing your story, and hopefully it's going to help many more people, whether it's with this radio interview and some of the pieces that you're writing and some of the campaign that CureLeaf is still rolling out. I want to thank you. And if folks have any questions in regards to CureLeaf, do you have any information to share in that regards?
I would say go to their website. You can see a list of their facilities and, you can choose one that's closest to your area. They have medical dispensaries and they have other dispensaries that are for recreational and medical. So definitely go to their website. It's very useful. And they're a great company. I'm glad to be working with them. And thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
We've been speaking with Michelle LaRue, and she is not only a Boston Marathon survivor, but also a spokesperson with CureLeaf, part of their iCannabis campaign. And that's all the time that we've been allotted this week. But fear not, we'll be back next week at 6:15 p.m., and we'll do it all over again. Until then,
WATD FM Marshfield, WBMS Brockton.